What I'm getting at, 72-75. What I know, they were a pretty good number of black troops that went over there. Is that correct?
Yeah, they sure were.
Okay. The black troops serve their country. They come back. They're trying to free the world of from communism, give them democratic rights and all that. Do you think when they came back from Vietnam and they were still facing a lot of, though not as much, racial tensions and prejudices and all that stuff, do you think they, that kind of heightened the black people's views on America? Do you think it kind of heightened their sensitivity towards the whole racial conflict after they served their country, then come back to a bunch of bigots? Any way you can answer that?
That's hard for me to answer. As strange as it may seem, although I've worked with blacks just about all my life, I never have had a lot of black friends. I read in a paper and the news articles where blacks felt like that they gave more. There were more blacks killed in Vietnam than whites. Well, the reason is because the draft was proportionate to the people that are registered for the draft, and so a lot of white kids had the advantage of going to college, and they could be the deferred. And whereas black kids were from the lower economic class, so they didn't have any deferment, so they had to, so there were more blacks over there by economic means, economic being that they didn't have the money to either go to college or get any kind of deferment, and so I'm sure there's more casualties and more deaths and on blacks, but I didn't associate with those folks, so I don't have a real good feel for that. Hell, as far as I'm concerned, anybody that lived through that thing was lucky.
Okay. Do you remember any, besides that you've already mentioned the Freedom Riders, do you remember any other, say, marches, riots, concerning racial tensions or Vietnam that occurred during, say, they don't have college, after college, right before college, just anything that just stood out in your mind that you could share with me?
No, I sure can. My parents were divorced in 62. My father moved to Mobile. He was working down there. So I was not estranged from him. I would go visit him, even though I lived with my mother. And I'll never forget it. In 1964, if I remember correctly, the Martin Luther King was leading a march along Highway 80, US 80, from Montgomery to Selma. They called it the Selma March. And Selma was one of the last bastions of segregation back in those times. And I was traveling from Anniston down to Mobile, and they didn't have interstates back then. And you had to use state roads and federal roads. Anyway, I went from Anniston to Talladega to Central Alabama, and you went through Marion. And around Marion, you had to cross 80, and about that point, maybe about midway between Montgomery and Selma. That's where the road crossed, going south to Mobile. And I was in a little piece of some foreign car. It was some kind of French, English Ford, as I remember. Yeah, English Ford. And the damn heater didn't work. And it was March, February, and I was so cold. And I had ridden in that car from Talladega, and the heater quit working. And so anyway, I crossed US 80 right around Marion. And I said, well, I'm going to pull off the side of the road and see if I can't tap the thermostat, see if the thermostat's stuck, and still can't get this heater to work because I was wrapped up in a blanket driving. So I got out of the car, and I shut the motor off, of course, you know, the flashlight, looked at the old motor, And I started tapping around on top of the heater holes that went into the block to see if the thermostat was stuck, where the water would circulate better and maybe give me some heat. And I went to get back in the car, it wouldn't start. And I said, oh my goodness, here it is. It was after midnight, around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I saw the highway patrol cars on 80 going back and forth, the lights flashing. I said, they are going to stop me, or they're going to think that I'm part of this march, and I'll get drawn up in all this horseshit, and I won't have anything to do with it just because I'm stuck on the side of the road just trying to get my old car started. And I'll never forget, it was the old car was messed up, and the only way it could start it is one of these weird things. I couldn't get much use out of the battery, but I kept fooling with it, and if I turned the lights on, as strange and crazy and as doubtful as it sounds, for whatever reason, it created the electrical circuitry to make the battery turn the motor. I turned the lights on the car, and the thing started, so I was glad. I didn't care if I had heat or not. I just kept going then. But I remember that. I remember when I bought my first gun. I was working in Birmingham right after I got out of school before I went in the Army, and I will never forget this. It was the King was killed in Memphis on one day. They told everybody in Birmingham y'all stay in. Birmingham declared a curfew because they thought there'd be riots in Birmingham. There were some activities, because that was still in the day of, you know, the dogs and the water hoses in Birmingham, even in the right. In the mid-60s. Bull Connor was the police commissioner. He was right. Still there, I think, during that time. But I'll never forget that I said I enjoyed working in the Inslee, Birmingham area, and I made some friends at an Eagles lounge up there. Eagles is something like a VFW, American Legion. And when I found, and one of the fellows I ran into at this Eagles club ran a jewelry shop, pawn shop in Birmingham, and I didn't have any type of pistol or anything. And so when we were up in the Eagles club that evening, when they found out that King had got shot, and so I asked him if I could come down the next day and buy a gun from him. He said, yeah, come on down.
Okay.
And I did that, a little 32, nice little gun.
I saw you about the gist for protection in case
you
got out of hand.
I was so afraid because I had to drive through black sections from where I lived in North Birmingham to get to work.
Okay, do you remember about what year that was, just the time frame?
I know exactly what it was, the spring of 68.
Okay. What were your personal feelings towards Martin Luther King, and then reflect them towards Malcolm X, or did you have any feelings towards Israel?
Okay. My personal feelings toward Martin Luther King at the time was that King was an outsider as far as the local population was concerned, and was advocating even though a lot of people would say nonviolent action, all I ever saw was the result of this nonviolent, quote, action was violence. All I ever saw was confrontation with police, with billy clubs or dogs, and so I was not a champion of King. King was not what I would consider a hero to the blacks, much less the whites. I thought he was leading. I thought that he was. I understood he had a noble idea for his race, and I gave him credit for that. But I felt like his actions caused violence that was unnecessary, whereas integration would take its course anyway.
Okay.
Malcolm X was just some crazy son of a bitch and wanted to kill all the whites. And as far as I'm concerned, the sooner he got out of the picture, the better off everybody would be.
Okay. A lot of people feel like that. You remember where you were from Martin Luther King? I believe you said you was in Birmingham.
Yeah, I was in Birmingham. I was drinking a beer at the Eagles Lounge in Pratt City.
Okay, what was the honest immediate reaction? When you first heard it, what was the first thing that you and your buddy started talking about? Beer in hand, loose tongue talking. You don't have to answer.
No, I don't mind. We probably rejoiced in it in a immature way at the time. I'm trying to recollect. There was no sadness. There was no sadness right there at the time that King was shot from our party. You got to remember this was a white establishment. It was not integrated. And so it was, you know, something like, well, we don't have to put up with this anymore, or maybe a comment like that. But that feeling didn't last over an hour until fear came into the whole group there with what are the blacks going to do in Birmingham now. And everybody was saying, well, I'm going to make sure I've got ammunition, and I'm going to make sure that so-and-so... And I just had this fear of not having a gun. And I had to have a gun. So that's when I went and got me a gun.
Okay. Speaking of the KKK, how popular were they, say, in the South, Alabama in particular, at this particular time period we talked about, with all the civil rights and the rest of the same place? And do you remember any of their issues? Were they had a lot of good stances, just anti-black? What were they about? Or would you know? Were you a member?
No, I was not a member of the Klan. And I'll tell you, the only time I ever saw the Klan, you hear a lot about the Klan during that time, and I'm sure the Klan was active from just newspaper reports and TV reports, but... I mean, if you didn't run in those circles, if you were not a member, if you didn't associate with a member, you wouldn't have any occasion to know who they were or be with them. But I'll never forget this. I drove religiously from Anniston to Auburn, mostly on weekends. And I remember, and to travel from Anniston to Auburn, you go down 431. You go from here to Wedowee to Roanoke to Lafayette. Between Hollis Crossroads on 431, right? Hollis Crossroads or 431-9 hits, and Wedowee, there's another crossroads called Morrison's Crossroads. And it's about halfway, or maybe a little bit past halfway to Wedowee. And I'll never forget, the Klan, on two occasions, I remember, they wouldn't have a roadblock there, but they'd be holding literature out. Like they would have one on each side of this crossroad. You'd have to stop there. It was a four-way stop. And they'd have literature, and they'd give you literature if you wanted it. And that's the only time I ever saw a man in a white Klan uniform.
Okay.